Session number 20094, Reel 2.
That's the Reel 2.
Right. So in the December, six of us from the TS Exmouth were taken down by one of our officers to Bristol, to the Temple Meads recruiting office. Unfortunately, Bristol had had a blitz over the last three or four days before we got there, and the recruiting office was it was a temporary establishment, no heating, very cold, and we went in there. There were some other boys as well that come from other parts of the area who were joining up as boys, and we did an English examination, a maths examination, quite straightforward maths, really just it wasn't nothing really complicated, and then we had a physical examination. And two of our boys actually were rejected. One because he had three teeth missing, and one which needed to be extracted. And the other one, pull yourself up, chin yourself up on the bar, and hang there like a slaughtered pig, naked, and they walked down. He had a slight curve to the spine. So he was out. In actual fact, I did find out later that the majority of boys who were rejected by the Royal Navy were for teeth and hammer toes. This was told to me much later. The number of boys that failed their physical examination because of teeth or hammer toes. A few of the eyesight, but mainly that was the problem. Some didn't know, by the way, that they didn't know that they were colourblind until they had the colourblind test. We returned, having passed our examination, and then just after Christmas, we received notification, and the four successful applicants, we went again down to Bristol, taken down there. We were met by about 15 to between 15 and 20 boys. It's a long time ago now, but it was a good group of us, about 20 to 24 of us all together. And very kindly, old Chief Petty Officer, I don't know what branch he was, but all I know is a Chief Petty Officer. he took us in hand and got us all the way up to catch a boat to go across the Isle of Man. We were going to join HMS St George in the Isle of Man. Well, we got to Fleetwood, and unfortunately, the Snaefell, which is the Isle of Man steam packet vessel, wasn't there. Something had occurred, and she was delayed. So we all had to sleep that night. They bed us down in the gymnasium. By this time, there were boys from all over the country. It must have been about 200 boys now, 250 boys. And we had to bed down in the gymnasium for the night. Next morning we were put on coaches and we taken to Fleetwood and we joined the Snaefell at Fleetwood. That was after a breakfast of, I think it was beans on toast or something like that. But anyway, we got on board the Snaefell. and sail for the Isle of Man. We had a cup of tea and a bag meal issued to us on the Snaefell, which is sandwiches and a pie. That was about, well, about 1 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And eventually, when we got to the Isle of Man, we got to disembark. It's most noticeable that there were a lot of chiefs and petty officers who were going to be there. They were all very, very friendly with us going across the Isle of Man. And they were giving and offering and taking cigarettes from the boys, you know, they're chatting away. Oh, this is going to be a really nice life. When we got to the Isle of Man and we got onto the jetty, a rude awakening of most of them. They were real Jekyll and Hyde characters. They became Hydes. We were all, by this time it was dark, by the way, and it was absolutely freezing cold. And us boys in the Exmouth, we were actually shivering because we didn't have any coats. We just had the naval uniform on with a jersey. Anyway, they've fell us into some rough marching columns. Bear in mind that most of them had never done any marching or any other before in their life. Rough marching columns, and everybody said, well, we're going to Onken Head, which is around the bay from Douglas. We're going to Onken Head, and somebody asked, well, where's the transport? No transport, you're marching. So eventually we got up to Onken Head to what was formerly Housedrake Holiday Camp. And when we got there, we were detailed off by a list of which chalet we had to go to, which we had to find in the dark. The chalets themselves were very, very small. They were, bear in mind, these were summer chalets, 2-inch breeze block walls, that's all, there's no insulation. And lit by a small 15-watt lamp light painted blue, so there, because the crowding of the beds, there was no space to put a blackout curtain around the door. You know, like an alcove passageway, so they couldn't have a blackout as such. The windows were blacked out, but they couldn't do this for the door. So there's very, very dim light. On each bed, there was some blankets. There was an attache case, a little brown attache case, a pair of pyjamas. In the attache case, there was a bit of what we call Pusser's Hard yellow soap, same as the old Sunlight soaps, washing soap. A piece of that, a towel, a toothbrush, and a small round tin of the dentifrice, and a razor. That was already in the attache case. And so, well, once you've got in there and you know where it is, you've got a muster in the main hall. Well, when we mustered in there, before you went in, you were again ticked off by a list. We were all given a number. I still remember mine today, 8194. That's my shift book number at Housedrake. You know, a little card with that number on it, your mess number, and that mess number was also your class number for all future for the 6 weeks indoctrination training. Housedrake was purely for your first 6 weeks, initial training, kitting, things like that.
What was the name of the ship?
HMS St George is the boys' training ship. What happened was, when the war started, they moved all the boys' training ships, like Ganges, Invincible, Implacable, Caledonia, and move all of them to the Isle of Man. And they utilise those bases for people joining up, they were being called up, and became HMS St George, the Isle of Man. And so then we went in for our first meal, and it was a magnificent meal, if you can call one black pudding and two dollops of cold mashed potato a magnificent meal. But anyway, that's what it was. And two slices of thinly spread with marge or butter, I think it must be margarine, and a mug of watery tea. Of course, there were lots and lots of complaints. Everybody was some of the boys are there, myself. The what we call the ship boys, the Exmouth, and places like the Arethusa and Watts Naval School and people like that, we were used to that kind of harsh treatment, shall we say, so it didn't bother us too much. But for somebody who'd been, particularly some of the ex-grammar school boys who were nearly 17, it was a bitter blow. It was also a bitter blow for a lot of them who were told, no, you are not allowed to smoke anymore. And all their cigarettes and everything else was confiscated. And then they realised why all the chiefs and POs were very friendly with them on the way across on the slave hole, because they sussed out all those of them who smoked. It was very clever, very cleverly done. But anyway, we had this meal and we turned in, and natural fact, you know, as I say, I have been used to a certain amount of deprivation just after Easter 39, of harsh treatment and strict discipline, so I could take it. Even though I was only 15, I could take it, you know. But it was a bit disturbing to hear a lad who was nearly 17 cry himself to sleep at night time, and that was that went on for a few days. I couldn't quite understand it. But there again, I'd been inured to it. We were introduced to our class the next day when we got out of the cabin. A very heavy fall of snow was there, and we stepped out of the cabin and the snow was almost at the door, and that was there were three steps up from the ground to the chalets, and that was full of the snow. We got across and we had our breakfast. Depending on your itinerary for the day, what you're going to do that day, whether you're going to be parade training or kitting or what have you, medical examinations, further medical examinations, inoculations, and all this kind of joining routine business. our class, we were scheduled for parade training first straight away. There were three of us XO boys in that class. The rest were all, I'll say the word, all the rest were civilian boys. You know, they hadn't been used to the training kind of attitude. But the first thing we had to do was to clear off snow from the tennis courts, which were our little mini parade grounds. And at one end, it was about 6 inches deep, but we had blown in against a cliff face, about 4 to 5 feet deep. We roll that set to and clear all the snow away first, and then go through the parade training. Our instructors, and we had boys called instructor boys, boys who finished their training and were awaiting draft, or they'd been selected. They came along and they were vicious. I had privileges. They were allowed to smoke and things like that. Anyway, I didn't bring them because I never did in those days. And so consequence was they used to look upon us, try to take us, what they call ship boys, down a peg. Didn't want us to think that we knew it all kind of attitude. But the officers would bring us out the front and do demonstrations about things, but that's beside the point. In those days, by the way, the Navy SEAL form force, it goes back a bit, all the Army and the RAF had gone to march in threes for ages, or for at least a year or so, but the Navy SEAL form force.
What were these boys called who were in charge?
Instructor boys. With each class, there was allocated an instructor boy and two petty officers.
And you say they were vicious?
Well, yes, they weren't averse to walking behind you and giving you a sharp dig in the kidneys for the thought you weren't standing up straight and this kind of business. Oh, yes, they were vicious. It was the terrible syndrome of giving someone who'd been pushed around for a long time, giving them a bit of authority, and they take it out on the others. So we weathered it. During the 6 weeks at House Strait, we did all our kitting, and we were given a piece of wood with a name carved in it on reverse, about 3/4 inch high and the length of your name, and that was your type, which you stamped all your clothing with. On blue clothing you stamped with white paint, on with other clothing you stamped with blue paint, like the back of your collars, and all your name had to be sewn in. Your name had to be sewn in by chain stitch on every piece of kit that we were issued with. And you couldn't do long stitches, because if the petty officer used to check each one, and if it was no good, he used to go snip, 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 you had to go and do it again. So you couldn't cheat. After about the fourth week, we had a lecture. I noticed on the class list that were put up that I was down as a simple seaman. And then the fourth week, we had a lecture from the signal officer, who said, anybody who wants to be, he gives a lecture about signals, visual signalling and WT. Anybody who wants to be considered, those who weren't direct entry communications, go along and see him after the meeting. Of course, a few others toddled along and said, I want to go in the communication branch. So he looked up my records. He said, well, he said, the WT section, he said, is rather full at the moment. He said, because we got a lot of grammar school boys, some of which have matriculated, and they're older. He said, and but you can come in the communication branch as a visual signalman, flag waver. I thought, well, I'll have a go at that. So I went in, and when after 6 weeks we were transferred to the main camp, which was Cunningham's Holiday Camp at Douglas, further in the town, when we transferred there, I found myself in Bimbo 211 class, which was a communication class. The first 12 weeks of our course was a mix VS and WT, that's visual signalling and wireless telegraphy course. It was mixed. Not being blasé, but I found it easy. Because whilst they were able to concentrate on learning semaphore, learning and reading and sending semaphore, and reading and sending Morse, I had known this from two and a half years back. In actual fact, I was already past the speed that you had to pass out at the end of 12 weeks. I've already passed that when we started. So I could concentrate more on the other aspects of it, the procedural aspects, and learning the definitions and colours and flags and the meanings of flags and things like that. And the short signals, WT signals and things like that, I could manage to concentrate on more on that. And then 12 weeks, we had examinations, and obviously from the practical side, I did quite well all the way through. On the paperwork side, I did all right, but except for the last question. It was question 12, was at the bottom, said, state your preference, VS or WT. So I put down WT, because that was my preference. Now I just waited for the bomb to drop. In the meantime, I spoke to one or two of the others, and some of the direct entry vindication ratings who'd come in as WT, they wanted to be visual signalmen. I was armed with this in the back of my head, like. So when I was sent for by the signal officer, Lieutenant Commander Bush, he said, what's the meaning of this, pointing to the last question on the paper? I said, well, the question says, states your preference, VS or WT. I said, I've written WT, that is my preference. Oh, yes, but I specifically told you at Housedrake that you could only come in the branch as a visual signalman. I said, well, I still would like to be WT. He said, but you'll never make the grade. So I said, well, how do you know if it, don't give me a try? And I said, anyway, I said, if you look at the record, look at all the papers, some of your direct entry WT ratings are plumping for VS. So he scanned through a lot of papers and he said, oh, yes, yeah, that's true. He said, right, he said, I'll accept you in the WT branch on one condition. He said, what's that? I've got no qualms at all about your professional side of it. He said, but the first school examination that you fail, I will not backclass you to catch up. I will revert you to the seaman branch. So I don't want to waste any more money on you. So I thought, said, okay. I accepted that. And the next morning, or the next day, they've become part of the wireless telegraphy course. We went to school at Ballacameen, which is near Douglas, the school that we used to from St George. And walked into the classroom, and there was a lieutenant, schoolmaster. As we walked in the classroom, there was a bit of paper. He said, don't touch your desk. So we all sat down there. He said, right, sit. He said, in front of you, he said, there's a question paper, a maths question paper. He said, you've got no one to stand easy. Do as many of them as you can. He said, I don't know you. You don't know me. I won't know what's all about you. So, we all turned the paper over to start, and I was horrified. I could have a rough attempt at about two of them, and that was about it. So, I must have been looking pretty intelligent, because I was sitting there with my arms folded, and he came across, and he looked at my paper, and he just leant over very quietly. Can't you do them? And I just went. And you look at the name at the top, at the top of my paper. I'd imagine I fill that in all right. And when Stand Easy came along, he said, right, Stand Easy. And he just went there, said, yelled across there, what's your name? And he pointed to me. I said, listen, you collect all the papers and bring them to me. So I collect them all. He said, and of course, he said, what's this all about? Well, I was a 15-year-old and I was nearly in tears, thinking this sword of Damocles hanging over the head like a boy saving, here I come kind of attitude. He said, I was led to believe that the certain standards were going to be, they said, I've been told that the majority of the boys was lead matriculation and the rest of it. I said, well, I said, so I told him a bit about what had happened. He said, do you do running? I said, yes. I said, I do. I said, of any kind. He said, do you do the cross-country running? I said, no. I said, I haven't done that. He said, well, that's what you're going to do now. He said, because that's my sport. And so every weekend from there on in, he used to go cross-country running with lots of other boys from the camp, But I used to have to dog him all the time. And all the time he's firing questions at me of definitions and things like that and what have you, to keep my mind active. And he used to set me, we didn't have any time for really homework, but he used to set me little poses to work out. And even when I was in the heads, I'd be trying to work things out.
In maths?
And maths and anything, mainly maths. The algebraic formula that you need to work out for working out, because the boy Dreyfus course had a lot of technical to deal with magnetism and electricity and the propagation of wireless waves. In fact, the Amity Handbook of Wireless Telegraphy was the Bible for the course. And we got through most of Vol 1 and Vol 2, which is a pretty grueling task. And so all these definitions and formula he used to throw at me, and for me, so I would learn them. When the final exam, I was very glad to say I finished about halfway up the school list. I'd like to finish in the top, but I didn't. I finished halfway up, and sufficiently I got my advanced class rating and things like that, so I was quite happy. And I was very, his nickname, by the way, was Chuffy Page. And he got the name as Chuffy nickname because when he used to run, he used to chuff like a train. That was his breathing method, and that was his nickname, Chuffy. But he was a wonderful man. I owe him a lot. And so by this time we gone all the way around, and some of my class, matter of fact, one of them became a, after he left the Navy, became rather a famous author, Ronald Bassett. He used to write under the name of Clive. He did things like Your Life in Their Hands and Emergency Ward 10s. He used to write those there. He wrote many, many books. In fact, the last one, the major one he published, was the
HMS Sheffield.
Yeah, The Life and Times of Ronald Bassett. Unfortunately, he died 2 years ago. I've seen him since the war. I've been with him on one or two occasions since the war, because he was in with the Royal Naval Association, like I am, and yeah, but we got on quite well. But as I say, quite a few of them, and incidentally, while it was helping me, Chuffy Page was also helping him in his writing. And as I say, we became.